Marsh for the CGLO Community Calendar for the week of Monday, November 6th to Sunday, November 12th, 2023. Christmas is coming early for all you Concordia bookworms. Concordia's annual Epic Used Book Giveaway is back this week. For just a $2 entrance fee, you can walk away with up to 20 books. All you need to bring is a toonie, valid student ID, and your own bag. All proceeds go to student scholarships and the Student Emergency and Food Fund. The Epic Used Book Giveaway will be held between 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. from Tuesday, November 7th to Wednesday, November 8th at the Webster Library. I hope to see all you brainiacs there. If you're an artist, or just looking to get out of your comfort zone, the Gallery Parfois is hosting figure drawing sessions open to all levels this Tuesday, November 7th at 7 p.m. Models will offer a wide variety of poses in order for attendants to stretch their artistic skills. The session will be held at the Gallery Parfois on 4064 Boulevard Saint Laurent. Again, that's 4064 Boulevard Saint Laurent. And to all my fellow hip-hop heads out there, Black is performing at MTELUS on November 11th. The American singer-songwriter and rapper is stopping in the city for his North American Since I Had a Lover tour. Black will be joined on stage by Los Angeles singer-songwriter Quinn and one of my personal favorites, indie R&B musical artist Jordan Ward. The show starts at 8. Tickets are on sale for just $92 Canadian on Ticketmaster. And that's your community calendar for this week. For CJLO, I'm Lucas Matthew Marsh.
Amazing, but I'm also finding out that the music video is just as great.
Oh no way, I've never seen it.
I'm watching it right now. It's encapsulated with the 80s.
Well, that's some homework for the people out there. Apparently you guys all have something to watch later.
Anyway, on that note, you are listening to the Starting Rotation on CJLO 1690 AM. As always, I'm Gabriel Gindi. Jacob Snyder, and along with us, what am I saying? Anyway, for the ride.
Yeah, along for the ride.
That's what I meant to say. Along for the ride. Matthew Skelhorn, how are you, Matthew?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. This is awesome, and I'm ready to go. Let's get it going.
Well, you know what? On that note, I just want to know before we get into it, like, how have your weeks been though? Like midterm, well, not even midterm, but end of like semester, getting at you, like the blues. Like, I'm personally scrambling. I'm running from end to end, NDG to downtown. I don't know what's going on anymore. I'm like, my brain's a blur, opaque, you know. But like, what's going on with you guys?
Tough week. No sleep as well. All the projects, having to actually go to events and cover them. I'm in more of like an applied program, not as many tests. That's been tough. And Lions bye week, man. Awful. Hate when they're not on Sunday 1 p.m.
They usually play Sunday at 1 p.m.?
Yeah, that's their usual time slot, yeah. They're usually 1 p.m. Sunday. Now, this year, they've had a lot of prime time, but it was their, you know, their bye week, so they were off.
That's fair.
And not having my team to watch just sucked.
So then they just play later down the week or before? Or like Monday?
No, it was just like every team gets one off week.
Okay.
In the NFL, and it just happened to be theirs. So I had to watch other teams play. And that's fine. I enjoy that as well, but... You know,
well, I guess
I live and die with the Lions.
Instead of the Lions, you're probably watching this, though.
After 10,000 years, I'm free.
Yes, sir.
We know what this is. We're from this generation. We know.
Get
what this
ready.
Is.
Get ready, everyone.
Go, go, Power Rangers. But there is a reason, Jacob, as to why we did play this for a second. Can you just elaborate, please, as to the MLB World Champion Texas Rangers?
Yes. So, very impressive performance by the Rangers. They won the games by an average of 3 runs each time. There was great hitting throughout, even though they had one of their best postseason performers out. Corey Seager was the star and World Series MVP with a .286 batting average, 3 home runs, and 6 RBI over a 5-game series. For the Rangers, it all came together. The games that they needed hitting, they got it. And the games they needed pitching, like in the closeout, 0 runs allowed. Just an overall team effort that was super impressive to watch.
No, no doubt, no doubt. But you did bring up a valid point before we started the show, and that was viewership.
It was terrible. Viewership, how about lack thereof?
Lack thereof viewership. Yeah, so since they started recording this statistic, I guess you can call it, since you said 1966-ish?
Yeah, 1966, 67.
It's been the lowest since they've started recording.
Since they've ever started recording. It was that is some crazy. Of the lower viewership. It was something we brought up way back when we first started doing this show. We talked about how cool it would be and what teams we wanted to see in the World Series. I had mentioned the Phillies and the Astros. You had the great points about the Astros maybe cheating a little bit. Who knows about that? but unfortunately, for the MLB, apparently, it was too not unsuccessful, but not as successful teams that ended up making the series. And that's what really hurt the viewership, it seemed like. I had assumed that it would be well-watched, just like all the World Series usually are, just because it's the finale of a long, grueling season. I just assumed that people would want to see it, but the viewers showed you otherwise. For the MLB, that has to be concerning.
Well, generally, I'm assuming when there are two smaller market teams, the viewership won't be as big as, let's say, as you mentioned earlier, Dodgers versus Yankees, for example, right?
It'd exactly. Totally different. Would be massive. And for baseball, it's not what you want, right? That's the final game of a long, long season and also a long postseason. And you had your lowest viewership ever. And unfortunately for Texas, they've had a really solid year. They didn't have the best regular season, but their postseason performance was extremely impressive. They had hitting and pitching throughout, despite one of their star pitchers, Max Scherzer, not even being able to pitch for many games. And to not be watched when you have this great performance, if you're the owner of a team, that must be frustrating. These players are having their moment, especially Corey Seager having this excellent series and winning World Series MVP of the least viewed World Series ever.
But listen, I'll be brutally honest with you, though. When you mentioned that they still had a viewership number of around 9.1 million.
Yes, sir.
As someone who is totally blind to the MLB, I still thought that was a massive number. Because generally when you think of MLB viewership, you think of like older people, you know, people who don't really like, you know, get into the, or not like, more or less like the older generation, like the old heads will still watch it. But like the newer generation, do they still like, is there a demographic or age demographics to these statistics, or is it more or less just a generalized number?
So it was a generalized number, but I think there's something to your point. I think you caught a lot of the old heads still watching just to watch.
Just to watch,
the finale,
right?
Of a yeah. long season. But the young people, absolutely not. I bet if we saw a breakdown of the statistic of the age categories watching, you wouldn't see very many young people, because the Arizona Diamondbacks, they just don't have the following. Like, I always think about when we go out on the street. What hats do you see for MLB teams? You see Yankees.
The
you
classics.
Right. Yankees, Dodgers, a few Tigers, occasionally the Cubs. But you're outside of Arizona, you're not seeing Diamondbacks gear. And for a lot of people, I find in this generation for baseball, it's not players that necessarily draw them in. It's actually the gear. MLB is some of the coolest gear in all of pro sports. Their alternate jerseys are amazing.
Have you ever looked at, and I might butcher the league name, but the Mexican Baseball League?
There. Yes, I
their
know.
Their logos are
so
ridiculous.
Cool. So cool.
They're pretty cool.
And they have so much freedom with designs and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen as well. I've only seen this on Instagram, just quick clips. But the Savannah Bananas are an actual lower league baseball team. Like you talk
the
about
Savannah.
Creativity.
And what's the logo? Like a banana with glass? Like the banana slugs from Pulp Fiction type
Yeah,
of thing?
It's like a cartoon banana. Exactly. Like how neat is it? Just the freedom to create with uniforms and just have fun. And they'll have special theme nights and stuff, the lower tier baseball leagues. So I think that's what draws people in, and It's just disappointing. That's like, as great. A baseball fan, it's disappointing whenever you see the culmination of your season not be watched.
Yeah, well, at least something less disappointing is now the Bengals' record, right? So at the beginning of the season, they were 3-1.
Beginning of the season, sorry to jump.
No, sorry, they're 1-3. 1-3, excuse me.
Backwards, yeah.
Yeah, backwards. But, you know, Joe Burrow was, like, you know, teetering on injury here, had like a bit of an injury there. You know, they weren't doing that well. The defensive end was okay-ish.
Yeah, it was hit and miss.
But now they're 5-3.
Could not believe the turnaround. So, yeah, what you mentioned about Joe Burrow's health was 100% on the dot there. That really slowed them down. He wasn't really able to get outside the pocket, and he wasn't really able to push off his back leg and get those deep throws going. I also wasn't really impressed with their secondary receivers, especially T. Higgins, dropping a ton of balls. But now you see Burrow being able to push the ball down the field now. He's distributing to everyone. Joe Mixon's catching passes. The tight end's catching passes. Obviously, Chase is getting a ton of balls again. And they just look unstoppable.
Yeah, and they won in a commanding fashion against the Bills recently. That also, you brought up a valid point before the show about Josh Allen's turnover rate.
I didn't know this. So I just kind of came across the stat on Twitter. Since 2018, who do you think the league leader in turnovers is? You know, you'd guess maybe one of the poorer team's quarterbacks.
Like,
you know,
like a true scrambler, like a Lamar Jackson maybe.
Sure.
Deshaun Watson even.
Sure.
You know,
oh,
excellent.
Dude,
right?
Exactly. It's actually Josh Allen.
That's crazy.
He has 91 turnovers since 2018.
Absolutely wild.
That's a problem. And it seems now that every game he's due for an interception, which for that offense just slows them down so much. That's an offense that relies a lot on deep passes. Some of the games he will check down and maybe run a little bit more, but they tend to avoid that to protect him. But when you turn it over, that makes you a bit more risk adverse, and you're not taking the deep shots as much, which hurts the offense.
So this season, have the turnovers come more from him scrambling out of pocket or more from legit straight interceptions?
More interceptions. He's okay. Not making the same quality of reads.
Yeah, because I'm looking at their last three games, and they're 1-2.
Yes.
So
extremely disappointing losses.
There's a loss
well.
Of confidence there as well.
There must be. And the weird thing is, it's the same core of receivers. It's not like he's breaking in new guys, like, or you have a Kansas City Chiefs situation where they're just not the same quality of receivers. It doesn't make a ton of sense, and I don't know why he's pressing. This is second year under Ken Dorsey, the offensive coordinator. You'd think it looked better opposed to looking worse.
Yeah, you'd think that, but it just seems like it's kind of like a fall from grace compared to last year, right?
You're talking about a guy who's continuously, even this past offseason, in the MVP conversation, and his quality of play is just not matching that. On one hand, if you're Buffalo, I understand wanting to protect him and trying to tell him not to run as much, but it seems to be really hurting your offense. Without the threat of him running consistently, defenses are able to key in on their passing a bit more, and they slow it down. They've just been able to slow down the pass game.
No, for sure, for sure. Well, on that note, I think we're going to take our first little break, and we have some NHL talk after these short little messages.
Traveling seems almost like a necessity, either for the pleasure of discovering new places or to visit friends and family. However, in a time of increased awareness about our environmental impact, ViaRail might provide the answer you need. Not only does ViaRail offer a solution to the problem of travel's carbon footprint, but does so at low cost and with great comfort. But don't just take it from me. Here are two members of the Concordia community who can speak to their own experiences traveling with Via.
I love taking ViaRail because I like the quiet pause and relaxation it incorporates into my travel. I always meet really cool people on the train and enjoy taking the time to have interesting conversations with my fellow travelers about where they come from and where they're going.
I've used ViaRail quite a few times and I really like it. It's accessible price-wise, even for students, and it's super, super convenient. I'll definitely keep using them.
Go to viarail.ca to learn more about pricing options for students and young people so you can start making a difference and saving money with your travel today.
Hey, are you looking for an alternative to FM radio playlists? Then tune in to the World Beat News radio program right here on CJLO 1690 AM every Tuesday from noon to 1 p.m. to hear brand new world beat music from mainly Canadian artists. Call or text at 848-7471.
You know, really similar to the other night. Thought we had a good start, and then just mental mistakes that are just keep costing us over and over again and make us chase the game, and it's hard to chase games in this league.
Is that the frustrating part, Connor, is that you see what the issues are and you're just trying to resolve them, or what's the most frustrating part right now?
It's just death by a thousand cuts, you know, like that's what it feels like.
Death
it's just,
by a thousand cuts. That pretty much encapsulates the whole Oilers season as of right now, Matthew, eh?
Yeah, it's very unfortunate compared to the crazy season they had last year, getting up all the way to the conference finals and McDavid having like the craziest year ever, to this year where they only have 2 wins in their first 12 games. And it just seems like the whole team is offbeat.
What really surprised me was the differential, especially when you have Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl pretty much commanding the offense. How can they not score more than what they're scoring?
I think it has to do with the vibe in the room. I think it has to do for multiple factors that it kind of goes to show that two players can't carry a team for X number of time. They have in the past, but it's clearly not working anymore. And the organization has to look into making some changes.
And you nailed that on the head. I've been saying this for the past 4 or 5 years. When you allocate nearly, 30 to 40% of your cap space on two players, neglecting everything from your defense to your goaltending, and now, in a way, technically blaming your goaltending, sending Jack Campbell off to waivers to go play in the AHL affiliate team. Like, this seems like a management mess up from the top down.
Yeah, I think the signing in general too was probably not the best idea, but the fact that they're doing this to Jack Campbell, such a veteran in the sport and didn't really get much chances. I think Skinner was getting more of the starts to begin with. But yeah, no, it's ridiculous that almost 50% of their cap is on 3 to 4 players, not to mention Darnell Nurse and Campbell's salary this year.
They did do me dirty, though, because I was watching the latest game against Vancouver, and I did look at the shooting differential. I think that the first period, the shots were 19-2 for in favor of Edmonton, right? And they scored a goal, and I was like, okay, cool, let me you know, I have like $3.50 in my Bet365 account. I'm not going to use it for a coffee. Let me see if I can maybe make 7 bones. So what I did, I think the money line was like under 6.5. Very bad move. They lost, what score, 8-1? No, they lost, 6-2.
Yeah, they lost 6-2.
6-2. Another game they lost against the Canucks was 8-1 on October 11th. But yeah, they lost 6-2. And just the collapse, I think Vancouver scored 3 back-to-back-to-back goals. And then they can never come back from that, really.
No, and it's tough for the Oilers to kind of get their groove back when they're playing versus the Canucks, because the Canucks remind me of the Devils last year in their first like 10 to 15 games, where they're just on something else, defense, offense, and their goalie in Demko that are just absolutely crushing it.
Yeah.
So it's not the perfect team to try to bounce back off such consecutive losses.
No.
But nonetheless, Edmonton is still considered one of the best teams in the league, and the fact that they're not producing as they should be just goes to show that there needs to be changes.
Just to give you an idea, their last 8 games, they're 1-7, with the only win being at that Heritage Classic game against Calgary outside there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Calgary isn't a formidable opponent either. Kadri isn't performing. Huberto isn't performing either. So I understand how can they accumulate the gusto to come back and actually start winning games, because now you're looking at Darnell Nurse signing, which is atrocious. Like, to be honest, signing a defenseman who wasn't really proven, okay, whatever, he can play defensively, I guess, but you're not going to pay upwards of $9 million, like Cale Makar money, for a guy who can get you maybe like 13 points a season. Right?
Yeah, and like you mentioned, not provide much defense.
Yeah, also, he's a cone out there. He's like one of the Montreal cones we have on St. Catherine. It's crazy.
Yeah, 24/7, they're always there. It's tough. It's really tough. They're like, they're going to have to make changes. And when I say that, I don't even know how they could, given these just atrocious contracts. It's going to be hard for them to move past this. They kind of got to use what they got and hope that they could bounce back off of this horrible beginning of the season.
So if you're Oilers management, do you know what would be the first move you would do? Because I know it's for sure not sending Jack Campbell on waivers. Because you can't blame a goaltender solely for the performance they're having. Like, even on the offensive end, goals aren't going in. Just the past three games, they weren't able to score upwards of 4 goals a game. It looks like just offensive production is null. It's non-existent. Meanwhile, defensive lapses are just reoccurring. To blame a goalie is a classic management move, I think. It's kind of like blaming a coach in the NFL or kind of like blaming a coach in the NBA, kind of like the same line where it's like, oh, yeah, let's all put the blame on one person rather than a collective. And unfortunately, in hockey, it's usually the goalie. But what would you do if you're Oilers management?
I wouldn't put Campbell on waivers. Exactly. I think I would have gave him way more chances than he'd got. Even last year, he only got a few chances and a few bad games. Yes, sometimes goals go in because of the goalie's fault, but most of the time it's a team effort. And putting all the blame on these goalies is just, it's not fair to them. It's not fair to them. They're not getting a fair chance. So I, first off, would not send Campbell on waivers. I would use the resources that I have. Given that they have such lengthy contracts, it's hard to kind of move some pieces around. And I saw rumors last week that maybe Patrick Kane is looking into signing with the Oilers. It's rumors.
But then what would that do, though?
It would do nothing.
That would do absolutely nothing.
Because they have everything on offense. I think on offense, what they need to work on is just to get their groove back and don't put too much pressure on themselves to kind of get to where they were last year. They got to work more on working as a team. It's as a whole.
Yeah.
I don't see it as pinpointing it's this person's fault, it's Nurse's fault, it's Campbell's fault. It's not that. It's the team.
And to piggyback off that collective sense you're bringing, it seems like, especially on the breakout in the neutral zone, that's where the Canucks kind of took advantage over the Oilers in this game that I watched, and they just brought them to town.
Yeah, they're quick. Canucks are just on a roll right now, and it's a very hard team to play against. They're very fast, and they're very witty. And the Hughes brothers, just to talk about them a bit, they're just going on a tear, and Quinn is just finally, recently named captain. So I think that kind of gave him some confidence, and they're going all the way. I think they're...
Even Besser, too, is doing great.
He has, like, 6 goals. He scored, like, 4 goals in his first game or his first...
JT Miller. Second game. Again, JT Miller is doing great, too.
Even their bottom six is performing. Their third D pairing is performing. They're playing as a unit. Honestly, if I were the Oilers management, I would take a look at other teams that have all these pieces, because the Oilers have the pieces to go all the way to win the Cup. But it's about how to work together. And I just feel... I just find I'm almost like speechless, because last year, if you just like rewind 6 months from now, I couldn't believe I would have this conversation right now about the Oilers, because they have practically the same team. Even the addition of Ekholm, which is one of the best defensemen that played for the Predators. And now I just feel like there's so much people, but it's just not, there's no flow in their game.
But is that the rest of the league catching on? You guys have talked about how there is the carryover from last year, basically the same team. Is that the rest of the league finding out, okay, these guys play this way, and they finally caught up to them? Is that why they're not performing up to the level that was expected?
That could be possible, actually, yeah. Very possible. Maybe they could, maybe they're shutting down McDavid, which is hard to say. I never thought in 1,000 years I could say teams are shutting down McDavid and Draisaitl, but it's very possible, Jake. It could be a very big possibility.
Yeah, I mean, they're the two biggest point producers in the league, so I'd have no doubt that every other team, every time one of these two are on the ice, that they're being watched heavy.
Yeah, no doubt. But on that note, though, let's take a ride down east into Montreal.
Oh, yeah.
You're an 18, 19-year-old kid by the name of Juraj Slafkovský.
Yeah.
Last year, you kind of had I don't want to say a mediocre start, but, it's expected, right? You're a rookie. You're the first-round pick. People are expecting great things of you, but then you end up suffering a season-ending injury. Come back this year. Your main centerman, Kirby Dach, gets injured for the whole year.
Oh, heartbreaking.
Now you lose an enforcer who can feed you the puck. Now you're scrambling, because not only are you not producing, but you have something like 2 points in the past like 9 games or something like that. And you see the frustration trickle down yesterday with Juraj when he slammed his stick against the boards. You know, what should the Montreal Canadiens do? Should they send him down to the Rocket? Should they keep him up? Well, like, 'cause last year they didn't, right? So would that kind of like not be insulting, but kind of like really lower his confidence if the Canes decided right now to like send him to the AHL?
I don't think so. I personally think that he should go down to the Rocket, but it's more on how it's perceived by the outside, how we're looking at it, how the media is looking at it, yeah. And how it's influencing the fans. People are worried so much that Slefkovsky's like not going to get a 100-point season one day because he's a first overall pick and he's a power forward. But things take time, and I wish we talked about this a bit before, but I heard Marty St. Louis talk about Slav's like path in the league,
yeah.
On how he was comparing it to how we use Waze when we try to figure out how to go to a location, and then let's say you miss the exit, well then you kind of have to like reroute to get to that location, which in Slav's case would be his destination to his full potential. And people are just trying to be so like pressuring him into being so good so quickly when it's rarely the case where you see a rookie get good like so quickly.
Yeah, no, it comes with the territory, I think, of being a first-round pick in Montreal. And not only the first-round pick, a first selection, right? You're the first lottery pick of the 2022 draft. Like you, and especially in the market we have, you don't only have English media, but you got French media too. And they're very critical.
Oh, yeah.
And they're going to come at you for little things, little itsy-bitsy little things, right? So if you continue with Juraj and his development, like luckily, you know, Montreal has a player-minded coach in Marty St. Louis.
Yes.
It's not like a John Tortorella. It's not like a Mike Babcock where it's like their way or the highway. Because if that were the case and we had a coach like that, he'd already be in AHL. Sorry, he'd already be with the Rockets in the AHL, right? So I don't know really what the move is with Juraj Slefkovsky. Do you send him down and take that shot and lower his confidence, and maybe he can produce well with Philip Meschar, right? One of his friends, or even Joshua Roth, for that example, who's doing very, very well.
He's in like the top 5 points.
He's doing very well. Yeah, yeah. Like 9 points in the past 5 games or something. Something ridiculous like that, right? So do you put him down where he can produce potentially, or do you keep him up in the big boy league where production might be at a stifle and his confidence even takes a bigger hit? Right, because we saw that with Kotkaniemi as well. I like when they made the draft, right? When they drafted Slefkovsky, okay, I found that it was very similar. Like the come ups between Slefkovsky and Kotkaniemi are very, very similar in the sense they both come from the SHL. They're both used to European ice. They're both around the same size, maybe not the same weight on Kotkaniemi's side, but same playing style, kinda. And that's what worried me initially. I'm like, maybe he won't get like due to his age because they're both drafted very young, right? But like, can they get accustomed to the North American ice? And you can tell that when Slefkovsky has the puck, he's kind of panicking because he doesn't know really what to do.
Yeah, right? He tends to have that a lot. But like to your point, when talking about Kotkaniemi, where like unfortunately we did trade him, but now you see him this year.
And he's doing great.
He's doing great after what? Three, four years?
That's also because the Hurricanes are suffering with injury too. So it's boosting him up a bit, giving him more playing time. But at the same time, you are 100% right.
Yeah, he's like he finally gained his confidence in the league, and he's building himself in the right way. But to go back to you asking whether sending him down or not,
yeah,
I think we should send him down, but maybe the management or even Marty needs to tell him in like the most positive way ever. Like, this is not sending you down to keep you down.
No,
like we're sending you down so that we can bring you back up when you're more than ready. Because we want to see him produce. We want to see him gain that confidence again. And we saw him score a goal the other day. But even when he scored that goal, you saw him kind of hesitate. And the shot didn't even fully release. It just went in. But, I mean, that alone, you still got a goal in the league. It's your second year. It's like it must have been a bit of a confidence booster. But he's just, like you said, very hesitant with the puck. And I think if he goes down to the AHL where it's a bit less quick, it's a bit more system-driven, and then he could kind of break through in that. And, as you said, he could play with Roy, he could play with Meschar. I think these are good players to play with at this time. It would be a great
confidence. And, by the way, Josh Harrah, eventually, when injuries will happen, because they'll be switches, send him up.
For sure.
If I can jump in here, I'm so curious. Where do you guys stand on the goalie situation with the Canadiens? This has been a massive topic of discussion. I've heard all these Canadian fans... My stance early on was that Allen was the move. But after that last game against the Lightning, I'm open to all opinions.
You want to go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, no, well, I was about to say, like, I mean, Allen is known for having either great games or letting a few goals in. Unfortunately, I couldn't catch the game yesterday, so I didn't see exactly what goals were in. But
4 goals in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, I've heard that. Like, it's
But then again, if we fully blame a goalie, like I remember yesterday in the game, the Habs came back with 2 quick goals, 4-2 in the third. Then, you know, when you're only down by 2 goals, you can kind of come back if there's ample time left, right, in the third period, which I believe there was. But then Harbor Jekai, right?
Wi-Fi, baby.
Exactly. He kind of, you know, he wasn't disciplined, took a really dumb penalty, which then resulted in, I believe, like another goal or something, which totally like blew their steam off. But yeah, like,
but do you have a preference? Who do you guys?
The thing about Allen, though, at this point, I think Primo deserves one of the slots. If we're really fully in a rebuild, because the thing is with Price, he was so good, we were never ever in a rebuild, and we talked about this before, like in prior weeks. Like, you can always build around the goalie because the goalie was the best player on the team.
Yeah.
And he was lights out. But then when he leaves, you see the gaps. You see like the problems.
The warts start to show.
Exactly. It's you crazy. See those problems, right? So to bring in Allen, who by all means is a great secondary goalie to have.
Exactly.
But the workload is too much for him as a primary goalkeeper. And that's when you see those lapses start to begin, because you're just getting more on your plate. You're more burdened with work, right? If you look at Montembeau, he's okay, but he's kind of like not really that consistent. I don't know.
But like, I think there's still some potential there with Montembeau with the games that we've seen this year.
So if we're in a full rebuild, what I would do, I'd probably trade Jake Allen for some picks, whatever, get him off the cap, because I believe he's the most expensive goalie the Canadians have right now. Bring up Primo, and then you have also Dobbs and the other, I believe he plays with Ohio.
The guy that we just drafted, Fowler.
Yeah, Fowler and Dobbs, eventually, when they come up, they can go into Laval and take that spot. So I think for next year, even, would be probably Primo, Montembeau, my 1 and 2.
Yeah. And
no particular order.
No, and I think trading Allen is all, not evident, but it could benefit us very well, especially because he had a few crazy games just this year. If he could have a few more games like that, we could definitely trade him at the deadline and get some good return. On him and keep Montembeau as number one, Primo as number two, and then just alternate. But it's still a goalie ever since Price left. It's tough no matter what we do. I think it's gonna be a long one for that.
Yeah, and speaking of trade deadlines, I know in the newsroom at Concordia, we talked about this, but if we could send one player somewhere, it'd be Gallagher to the Hurricanes.
Oh, we talked about that.
We did talk
recently.
About this.
It's true.
Yeah. And that's during the open house, we talked about this.
And we like both said almost Hurricanes at the same time.
Yeah, like simultaneously we said it. But like that'd be, I don't know who to move around, because right now the Cabs are a very, very young team. So I think maybe let this season ride out, see who develops well, call people up, Joshua Roy, Philip Meshar, if he starts to produce, why not? But yeah, maybe it's time for those older heads to try and win a cup somewhere else, like the Jake Allens, the Gallaghers, the Armias, even the Armias to that point. Like Armia, you can skadoodle soon there, bud.
Yeah, he was doing good in the AHL, and that's why ultimately he got called back up. But he could definitely benefit another team, hopefully, and we could get some return. But Gallagher is tough because he's like the last kind of OG, I would say, in our generation, at least for the Habs, and seeing him go would be a bit tough. But at the same time, like a lot, he's being criticized a lot. Although he's like one of the top point leaders in the team right now, which is pretty crazy to say. The veteran line is getting up most points. Monahan is doing super well, but
I really like the Newhook acquisition. Alex Newhook, I find he's a breath of fresh air. He's fast. He's a grinder. He goes in when needed. He's great. He's great. But from one prospect to another, transitioning into another league, Victor Wembanyama. I'm mispronouncing last names today. Jakai Wembanyama. You know what? I gotta watch this video here to just get my mind in.
Perfect.
VW. Is that his new nickname?
Easy. Yep, it is. Well, you wonder why you talk about butchering his last name.
That's so much easier than Wembanyama. I'm going to say V-Dub.
V-Dub, easy.
He is... He's literally, like, a player you take out of my career. Like, extract him from the video game and then plant him in real life.
He is the that's player we all designed playing 2K. He is exactly... That's such a good point.
Able to hit the three. Mobile.
Elite lengthy. Defender as elite well, defend- though.
Of course. Well, when you're 7'4", I hope so.
Can,
right?
Do you have to jump to dunk at 7'4"?
Barely.
No, he just is a little lob, like a little hop.
Little hop, right? It's a skip, it,
like,
if
like,
anything.
If you see him dunk, his feet are probably, like, what, 2 inches off the ground?
Maybe.
It's cute.
Yep. It's a little... Even to block shots, though, it's a wild thing. He just needs when to he, lean his body. Yo. He's got such a long wingspan. Yo,
when he blocked OG Anunoby.
Oh, that was crazy.
He sunned him.
It was terrible.
He papawed him.
That was
him.
Terrible.
He papawed him. He went for the layup. He's like, nope. Grabs it. He literally grabbed it.
He grabbed his shot.
Yeah.
Yes. He just
took it.
Like
he's picking apples
it.
In Kuzmo. Like he's picking apples in Kuzmo. Like he takes a classic picture on the ladder. Like,
he is the ladder.
He is.
That's a great nickname, actually.
The ladder.
I like that. I actually like that a lot.
V-Dub sponsored ladder. No. But he, so far, I hope injuries don't plague his career.
Oh, I know. Isn't that the fear? We've seen so many of those tall players like Yao come in the league, look amazing, and then by year 2.5, they're on their second knee surgery.
But I want to bring a point up because, like, I did think about this when the Spurs drafted him, but he's very similar. I don't know who I should go in front of here, but he seems very, very, very similar to the body style and low-key playing style of Bol Bol that was formerly once a starter in the NBA.
See, okay, that's the comp like, I've been hearing a lot. And
Shaq brought it up, but I was like, Shaq, bro, I've been on this for a minute, dog. Like, you know?
I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I feel like his game's a bit more complete than Bol Bol.
For sure.
Because Bol Bol, he was more of an offensive threat. He didn't quite have that defensive presence. True. What I see with Wembanyama is a less polished Giannis. To where Giannis is now. I see that sort of playing style. Where it's just, he's like this free roam player that can pick up, guard any position. On offense, he can space the floor, he can attack the rim, low post, mid-range area. He's a threat from anywhere.
The only difference, I'd say, between Giannis and Wemby is that Wemby can space the floor a lot more than Giannis can.
Oh, 100%.
Because of that shooting prowess. You know, he's a great shooter. He doesn't have the driving capabilities that Giannis has, though. Because Giannis is a burly boy.
He's a little thicker, but when he came in...
A little
in,
thicker.
Yeah.
Well, he's a 72-ounce steak.
He is, compared to Wemby, 100%. Wow. But once Wemby adds some weight, which I'm sure is in the Spurs program for him...
Yeah.
That's my projection for him, really. That's what I see.
It's a good one. Yeah, you know, because like especially with that shooting capability that he has, it seems like sky's the limit for him.
Like, I don't like the Durant comp. I had heard that as well, just because of how lanky he is. Yeah, I don't see that. I don't see that him just being this straight up scorer. Although, you know, during Durant's MVP year, he played a lot of defense and created a lot for teammates as well. But I don't see Wemby just being this scorer. The best part of Wemby is this all-around game.
Exactly. But this game against the Raptors, though, that went to OT, Wemby got the show stolen from him from Scotty Barnes. Scotty Barnes played a lights-out game.
You know what? I'll give you credit. I'll give a lot of other Raptor fans in my life credit. You all have been hyping up Scotty Barnes to me. I had sold Scotty Barnes. Last year, I was not impressed whatsoever.
He had a sophomore slump.
He definitely did. His rookie year, super impressed and everything. Sophomore year, as you said, I was worried his shooting would hold him back to the point where teams would just play off him so far. You'd be looking at a Ben Simmons situation. But he's improved on that, and he's seen the game a lot better.
I was in the Raptors management office when they drafted Scottie Barnes.
Were you really?
No, I wasn't. But I'm telling you what
okay.
They were probably
thinking. See, I don't know. I don't believe that. For those listening at home, I don't know Gabe before I arrived in Montreal. That could have been 100% true in my eyes.
No. But I'll be honest. Like, if you look at the come up between him and Kawhi Leonard, Very similar.
Now he looks back on track for that. That 100%.
Very similar, because they drafted him not for his shooting. They drafted him for his size and his defensive capabilities. And then they're like, how can we develop this player into a next Kawhi Leonard? Because, hey, all we need is Kawhi and we'll win. That's what they're thinking.
They're not wrong. They're definitely lacking a superstar. Like, why? It's every time I watch, like, they just need one more guy, which obviously any team could use one more superstar. But them especially, that roster feels ready to go. If you throw in a Paul George, if you throw in a Donovan Mitchell, you're talking about a title contender.
Yeah, and well, one thing that they do lack now, though, if you compare it to the championship-winning team in 2018-19, is depth a bit. They kind of lost Serge Ibaka. Well, they did lose Serge Ibaka, but they lost like that style that Serge Ibaka brought. Fred VanVleet, perimeter shooting like Danny Green. They lost a lot of those players that, you know, now if you look at who they have on the bench, not really the same type. But with Scottie Barnes, though, if he can just, because right now he's shooting lights. I think that game he had like five threes. Am I wrong?
He had a bunch of threes. I don't know how many, but more than I've seen him hit in a minute.
So to see him kind of like develop into like a Kawhi archetype type of player, it's kind of very reassuring for a Raptors fan.
It's got to be exciting. That would be you, right?
Yeah, but I'm kind of like a low-key Raptors fan.
Oh, you're a low-key Raptors fan. Again, okay, like, I wasn't.
If Montreal had a team,
oh, of course, we'd all be parading down St. Catherine. Yeah, we'd all be all over that.
With all the merch on. The spinning glasses, huh?
Could that happen?
Let me take this one. So we actually had someone who, what did he own? I think he owned a portion of where the Raptors play. What he said was essentially not a chance.
Eventually, though, maybe. I think a lot of like the economic side, like the dollar, the strength of the dollar really is a determinant as to why teams go to Canada. Like why do you think there's no NHL team in Quebec City right now? Yeah. There are investors ready. They have a new arena. It's not working out because, for one, I think Bettman's whole style of things is to expand hockey in the South, which is like kind of like, if you look at
ridiculous.
If you look at like teams like Florida, if you look at teams like Arizona that are now playing at a campus,
yeah,
like stop. They have like 3,000 seats in that arena, like something like that. Oh, it's a new arena. Yeah, but you share the logo with like
with
a school, with the Santa, whatever. Anyway,
that used to drive me nuts with the NFL. The Raiders were the worst for it. They used to play with the A's, so you'd see the lines from the baseball field on the football field. It just feels so tacky.
Yeah, but to go back to the point, I think really what's deterring teams from expanding in Canada and Montreal in particular is really the value of the dollar, really.
That's a great point. And the
investors
other thing,
too. Investors too.
Help. The other thing, I wish I remember the guy's name, told us the TV contracts in the U.S. are so deep and so embedded in the league that, you know, if you brought a team here, you'd have a lot of Canadian networks having to get involved. And the NBA, you know, it's a U.S. league almost exclusively.
Yeah.
Right. We got the one Canadian team. They don't want that.
You know what really hyped me up? When pre-COVID, when the Rays wanted to split with Montreal.
Oh, that was cool.
I was going to become a baseball fan. And then when COVID hit and they said no, and the commissioner was like, no, we're not doing it. We're not doing it no more, man. I was like, yo, you lost me. I'm going to go back to thinking the Astros only cheat or something, whatever. Like, they just said, like, garbage cans. But what were you going to say, Matt?
No, I was just going to say, like, and maybe this is a dumb question, but why does it work in Toronto and not here? And now I know that maybe the language is probably one of the biggest factors.
If you remember, the NBA also expanded in Vancouver.
I do remember.
And it
that.
Also flopped and ended up moving to Memphis. And that was just because there was fanfare here. People were down. There was a fandom developed. It's just that it really comes down to ownership. And we've seen it before in Winnipeg going to Arizona. We've seen it before with Vancouver going to Memphis. It just always depends on the new owners coming in and where they want their team to be. But anyway, on that note, we're going to take a quick little break and we'll be back after these messages.
Past and a whole lot more. Join me, Danny Payne, on The Pressure Drop every Monday at 5 on CGLO 1690 AM or CGLO.com.
Envie de films audacieux qui renouvellent le langage du cinéma? Pour un accès privilégié aux visions les plus stimulantes et diversifiées du cinéma documentaire, les RIDM sont le festival à ne pas manquer.
Ça se passe du 15 au 26 novembre à Montréal.
Rendez-vous au ridm.ca pour tout savoir sur la programmation.
Les Rencontres internationales du documentaire de Montréal. Là où toutes les histoires se rencontrent.
And we're back. You're listening to The Starting Rotation on CJLO 1690 AM. As always, I'm Gabriel Gindi, Jacob Snyder, and Matthew Scalhorn in studio. Bing, 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 bong. That partial message, because I clicked the button like three times and it just, I guess it wasn't going off. But that show promo at the beginning was the pressure drop. So go give them a good old listen. Anyway, we were talking about ownership in pro sports and the deterrence as to why some teams like expand or relocate and, you know, quaxaswa, whatever. So you get back into it or you want to talk about something else?
No, we can jump right back in. I mean, obviously as Canadians, we come at this with a certain perspective. We want more teams here, right? But it does not click with the primarily U.S. collective of sports leagues. They don't view our markets the same way we do. The dollar thing was an excellent point. But even looking at it, I guess from more, that was more of an objective thing. Looking at it in a subjective way, they just see Canada as lesser than terms of market.
Of course, Americans always look at us like the second little cousin, like nudge on the head, and good game sport, tap on the butt type of thing. But what's funny, though, is that the nostalgic factor that old Canadian teams or former Canadian teams bring, if you look at the MLB, right, look at the Expos logo, that hat still sells out. If you look at the Retro Classic in Colorado when they did the Nordiques jersey, that jersey sold out. They love that in Colorado.
Yeah, that was quick.
Yeah, very quick. So if you look at all these factors here, like, yeah, you could argue that, well, whatever, we're like the little cousin to the States, which we kind of are. We're like the little top hat to their whatever, you know? But there is a market. Whether we like it or not, there is a market, just that from an economic standpoint, right now is not the time to expand. It just is. It's a fact, because they do pay their players in U.S. dollars. So if your ticket is somewhat, like, let's say, I don't know, 100 and something Canadian, you got to do the conversion, you're already losing money. So for them, it's like, what, we're gonna sell a hot dog for $12?
It's tough. It's tough because, like we've all mentioned, the interest is here. We want it, but there's so many barriers to actually getting it done. That's just why I don't see it happening.
Like, they talk about putting an NHL team in Houston. I bet you put an NHL team in Halifax, it'd sell out every game.
Yeah, I would think so.
You're like, but
No. It would, but or the, fine. The issue City for is that matter, you know? Don't have the infrastructure from the TV side of things. It all comes down to these TV contracts. You don't have any of the major network station.
But here's the thing.
You would ask why Toronto got the team, right? Mm. TSN headquartered has the headquarters down there. There are networks to cover them on site.
That's fair, but we do have RDS here, which is kind of similar.
But do you know what's, like, frustrating here, though, now that I thought about it a bit? But, like, how, just for example, the Canadians are diffused on two separate outlets as well.
Yeah.
Due to contract English and French obligations. No, both French. Like, if you...
Oh, TV on RDS?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And these are extra hurdles that maybe teams would have to deal with if ever they were to expand to Montreal, for example, or Quebec.
But the whole... Well, we can talk exclusively about the NHL here, but the whole broadcasting situation has to be revamped, because I can't even look at a Winnipeg Jets game without getting a blackout. Meanwhile, I can go watch, like, an NBA game, Ohio, like Cleveland versus, I don't know, Charlotte, and I can kind of get it somewhat. But
NHL's still doing blackouts?
They are doing blackouts still.
Oh, my goodness.
Especially on, like, if you have, like, a TV provider package, they still offer it. Yeah, they still blackout.
Yeah, I'm paying. Well, I'm not paying, but someone's paying for me Sportsnet Premium, which is, like, $250
And you still get blackouts, right?
And I can't watch any Habs.
Yeah, yeah. Like, my friend bought NBA, the NBA app.
Right.
You can watch games, blackouts.
What? Are you kidding me?
Because
still?
Because it goes down, like, Bally Sports. That's a broadcaster for the smaller markets. They're on the verge of bankruptcy.
I was going to say, Bally is failing everywhere.
They're failing, and they have a big acquisition. They own a big chunk of broadcasting rights in the NBA. And I don't know why, but it seems like despite them having this kind of like a stranglehold or a conglomerate, like on this whole thing, we are still experiencing blackouts, which shouldn't be like, we're 2023. What is this?
No, that's terrible. I remember early 2000s, Lions games always blacked out. Didn't have the viewership numbers to be played. Didn't have the fans in the stands. I think the rule was you had to be 50% full at the stadium in order not to be blacked out on TV. Oh, wow. And they were getting blacked out all the time.
So they were getting blacked out based off fan attendance?
Fan attendance. That was the rule in the NFL for a long time.
What is that?
It was ridiculous.
So let's deter more fans from watching remotely if the fans in-house aren't satisfied with the fans in-house.
Well, pretty you know how the NFL operates. Show us you like our product.
Roger Goodell, eh?
Yeah. Well, was this Goodell? No, this was actually before Goodell's time.
Oh, well, still Goodell.
Well, whoever the
last.
I just want
to rip on Goodell.
Yeah, I know. It's easy.
Same as I rip on Bettman. Adam Silver's not that bad. He reminds me of Slenderman. Like when Wemby dressed up as Slenderman for Halloween, I thought he was dressed up as Adam Silver.
The frustrating thing is Silver's a pushover. I always liked Stern. Stern was always good. He'd put his foot down, he'd pick a direction, and he'd go. You see Silver.
Do you believe the conspiracy, the Ewing conspiracy?
Yeah, of course. I believe that? Well, have you heard the Jordan?
Hold on, Matt. Do you know what we're talking about?
No idea.
So, what year did Ewing get drafted? 80-something,
right? Yes, let's say 80s.
So, he was one of the highest touted picks ever, right? And at the time, the NBA was scrambling for cash. They were almost bankrupt. And pretty much, the way they did their lottery is they had a ball, a spherical ball, transparent, with multiple cards of different teams. And the commissioner would go in, put his hand, and pick a card out. And the team lucky enough to get selected would get Patrick Ewing. So you can see that there's one card in particular that he kind of hits on the side to bend the corner. And then as the ball's rolling, you can see that he's looking down. Trying to track that card as the ball's rolling. And then he goes in, picks it up, and there are cards on top of the card he selected. But he kind of shoves those cards off to pick out the card. And lo and behold, that card was the New York Knicks. Because it's the biggest market they had at the time.
Yeah.
So it's kind of things like that you have to watch out for. But
I had also heard they refrigerated that certain envelope so it would be significantly colder, the temperature coming off it, so we knew for sure which one to grab.
Yeah.
Even less subtle.
I guess with 144p resolution, no one would even know.
Right.
They wouldn't even know anything. It was bent corner? I don't know.
But the Jordan thing?
The Jordan thing.
So why he played baseball, apparently.
Oh, that was because of gambling. Debt,
gambling right? got oh so out of control, God. The commissioner told him.
You think?
Oh, 110%.
The world of sports, huh? Sports and money. And now the thing is, I know we're talking, we're pretty much on a rant here, but mm-hmm. the whole gambling thing, what do you guys think about that?
It's frustrating. I had to deal with it as a Lions fan, seeing JMO suspended for betting on non-NFL games, but just because he was at a team facility, that violates a rule.
And here,
so we lose our receiver for four games.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Get this. So Shane Pinto.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Get the irony of this one. So he, I believe his friend logged into his betting account, bet on a sport, not even hockey, but on a random sport. It could have been cricket for all I know. I don't know. It must have been any sport. Anyway, he gets caught, fined. And he's suspended for 41
games.
Are
you kidding?
But at the time, I don't even think he was signed to an NHL contract. And no. ironically, the Senators helmet logo, their sponsor, is Bet99.
Wild. Absolutely
wild. What are we doing?
And it's also wild that he didn't sign. But just to begin with, 41 games for something that he personally did not do, and even if he were to bet, was not in the NHL...
I find that betting is just killing the rivalry of what sport is, though, because now you have randoms who just pull up just because they put $3. I even talked about it earlier. I put down $3.50.
You're part of the
I
problem.
Put $3.50 down for because I was literally okay, you know what, I'm watching this game. Yeah. I'd never bet, but I have this from last year, I'll just do it. But there are people who don't even know sports, or people who do know sports who have a problem, who are now betting on the wildest things, like ping pong in Taiwan, you know?
Oh, my God.
Stuff like that.
I know too many people who are just betting on weird tennis
matches. Yeah, jockeying or horseback racing or what? I don't even horseback racing. Horseback riding? I don't even know, man.
They're betting on it, though. For sure
they
are.
They have to find some weird stream from Indonesia.
They'll find it.
They'll find it.
Any way to get some money, they'll find it.
Yeah. But anything we want to add before we
just it changes the way you watch the game, too, though.
It does.
I don't know. You know, you talked about your few bucks, but I know myself, if I'm ever, there's only one team, you know, my gambling stays to football usually, unless March Madness comes around. But, you know, the Lions are the only team I really care about if they win or lose. But all of a sudden, when you got a couple bucks on some games, you're way more concerned in the outcome than you ever would be. It changes how you watch sports.
That is true. That is true. And I guess it does bring more people in, but I just don't like the way they promote it. It seems very, like, very sly, you know?
It does. The fact, like, you guys, I didn't know this hockey situation. Mm. That's ridiculous. The fact the logo of the betting company is on the helmet and you just tossed a player for using...
Who wasn't betting on hockey.
Right. I get it. If he's betting on the sport, completely different situation. Calvin Ridley completely agrees he should have been suspended for the full year. He bet on football. The sporty place.
That's backwards.
Right. Not okay. But for these guys, like, again, the Jambo situation, who are betting on other sports legally, I don't understand any form of punishment when you're collecting all this money from these betting companies.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not to mention that there's, like, I could speak for the NHL on how there's so much more ads, too, on multiple different betting sites. It seems like that's what we're getting in between periods, that's what we're getting in between, like, timeouts, even. It's just so relevant in the game, which is making it worse.
And that seems like a post-COVID thing. Like, they started integrating ads amid COVID, like, amid the pandemic.
There was a law that, like, passed, I believe, like, recently, like, it's been a year now where, like, we're allowed to bet legally on sports. And then that just built a whole bunch of different betting sites.
No, for sure.
That's
for sure.
Great point. It wasn't legal in many U.S. states until the last year or so.
Even in Canada, it was only legal. It was only enacted, I think, in 2020, end of 2021 or beginning 2022.
Yeah.
Yeah. But one thing that actually did bother me that COVID brought, and it's not that serious. It's more of a tire. It's an attire thing. The fact that NBA coaches now are wearing tracksuits and not ties.
Oh, you don't see. I like that.
Grinds my gears.
No,
you are getting paid millions of dollars. Okay, you don't want to just put on a blazer, buddy. Like, come on.
See, to me, like, that defeat. No, it's not that intense. I understand it is that intense, but from an optics perspective, I actually prefer the more informal look.
Yeah, but it makes it exactly. It doesn't make you look like it's a legitimate product. Like, I guess because I'm initially an NHL fan, right? So, like,
they're all suited.
I'm used to the coaches coming in, you know, looking like to the nines, you know, like with a nice tie, a nice blazer, looking sharp, ready to kick some butt, you know, straight up. But now I'm seeing the NBA, and mind you, before they looked nice too. Like, I remember Phil Jackson with the tie, he's yelling, his tie's flailing in the wind. You know, that's beautiful. But now, when they're little dippers, little spandex pants.
See, that's
bro.
So funny. My perspective comes from the complete opposite side. I come from watching the NFL. These guys never wore suits. Yeah. You had one outlier back in the day. Jack Del Rio used to coach the Jacksonville Jaguars, would come to games, NFL games, walk on grass, fully suited.
Shout out
he
to Jack Del Rio.
Ridiculous.
Shout out to
looked
Jack Del Rio.
Ridiculous.
He knows what's up.
no, but, like, I don't know, maybe NFL is a maybe it's the fact that they're outside, I don't know, in a stadium.
Half them are indoor. Half of them have been indoor.
But, you know, it's a I don't know.
I picture, like, jackets and stuff. Like,
I just remember, yeah, even watching The Last Dance, seeing how they would pull up.
That was cool.
It's kind of baller.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's cool. Kind of like Jordan in a full dress, and if dressed up to the nines again, full suit, shooting dice with, like, a security guard who's also dressed up nice. I don't know. I just find it like it's an aesthetic, you know? But that's just, I'm just being critical. Anyway, we have 2 minutes left. Any, like, final remarks you guys want to add or what?
Yes. For those at home and for us, one of the worst NFL slates, primetime slates coming up this week. What else are we watching?
Oof. I guess we'll watch the Habs lose. I don't know.
Unfortunately, we will watch the Habs lose. Well, they are. No, what are they? Who are they playing versus on Thursday? I don't remember. But
I don't even know.
Yeah, I got it. But hopefully the Oilers win because they're playing versus the Sharks on Thursday.
Imagine the Sharks win. That's another team that's doing horribly. One win.
Oh, my goodness. Never mind. We do have something else to watch Thursday. Habitat versus my Detroit Red Wings.
Oh, that sounds like a good
doing
one.
Pretty good, too, man. Your Red Wings are doing pretty good.
Yes, sir.
Well, on that note, you were listening to The Starting Rotation. Again, I'm Gabriel Gindy. Alongside me, Jacob Snyder and Matthew Skelhorn. See you next week.